Hello, and welcome to Dream Gardens. I'm your host, Jody Lima, and this is the very first of what I hope will be an ongoing series of podcasts in which I talk to all sorts of people. Teachers, librarians, writers, or really anyone who enjoys reading children's books. In the podcast, I'm going to ask my guests to focus on one book in particular, whether it's a book from their own childhood or something more recent they discovered as an adult. We'll talk about what it is about that book that makes it so special, what made them laugh or made them cry, what inspired them, what they learned from it, or why it just seems to stick with them and resonate the way some children's books do. The name of this podcast comes from two quotes that I think sum up nicely my own feelings about children's books. The first quote is from Neil Gaiman, author of The Graveyard Book and Coraline. It is an attributed quote, so I can't say for certain if he actually ever really said it, but it's still a good quote. A book is a dream that you hold in your hand. Very nice. The second quote is supposedly a Chinese proverb. And again, I can't vouch for how authentic it is, but I think the quote itself rings true. A book is like a garden, carried in the pocket. What I think both quotes get at is how a really good children's book acts on our imagination, taking us places we've never been before and yet still seem very familiar, and how it plants seeds in us to grow our own imaginary gardens we can explore whenever we need to. In other words, dream gardens. My guest today is Jacqueline Lipton, who writes under the name Casey McGuire, including the YA novel Inside the Palisade, winner of the 2016 Purple Dragonfly Award for Sci-Fi and Fantasy.
Her own website and blog is Casey McGuire, author and book lover, which you can find at caseymcguire.com. And she's also a contributing blogger with Luna Station Quarterly, which you can find at lunastationquarterly.com. Thank you for being here, Jackie.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I had a chance to read your novel Inside the Palisade, which I enjoyed very much. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what it was like writing that?
That was my foray back into writing after a several decades long break. So I had started out in college doing playwriting. And then after I had my children much later in life, I decided to try fiction writing. And it's a story about an all-female dystopian society where the men have been banished outside the wall for having caused all of the problems in the universe. And the lead character, Meg, finds a young man inside the walls, and she has to figure out who he is and how he got there and whether the truth has actually been told to her about men and women. And really the impetus for writing the book, and it's embarrassing to say it, but in my real life, I'm a law professor, and it's a very male-dominated profession, and often the women leave a meeting saying things like, well, it would be different if women ran the world. So it was kind of my tongue-in-cheek look at, well, you know, if women in fact did run the world, they would probably make just as many mistakes as anyone else. So it's really just my tongue-in-cheek look at feminism.
The book you chose was one I hadn't read before. It's Ambassador by William Alexander. This is a sci-fi novel from 2014. It's published by Margaret K. Elderberry Books. And for the readers who are unfamiliar with the book, can you tell us just kind of briefly what the book is about?
Well, I chose this book, Will Alexander's Ambassador, partly because I just love sci-fi and fantasy, and partly because this book appeals to a number of things I think are really important in a middle grade audience. One of them is it's a real boy book. It's a buddy comedy with an alien and an 11-year-old boy who's been chosen to be the ambassador to the galaxy, basically, on behalf of the Earth. And they get into all sorts of scrapes and adventures trying to solve intergalactic problems. So it's a fish-out-of-water story. It's a buddy comedy. It's a boy book. I mean, girls would enjoy it too, but it has lots of jokes about science fiction, space travel, and he draws very interesting parallels with diversity, inclusion, immigration issues in the United States because the main character comes from a Hispanic family and there are all sorts of interesting parallels between difference, diversity, and inclusion brought in at the intergalactic level. And there's a really cool scene on the moon as well. They actually get to the moon in this book, and in the sequel they travel even further.
And how did you first come across this book or introduced to this book?
I was very, very fortunate to have just finished my MFA at VCFA, the program in writing for children and young adults. And when I started the program some years ago, Will Alexander Alexander was a new faculty member, so I started in his first year as a teacher there, and I was lucky enough to have him as my advisor in my second year. When he had first started, he'd just won the National Book Award with his first book, Goblin Secrets, which is a fantasy, and it has a companion novel, Ghoulish Song, which was just coming out. The Ambassador Nomad duology were later books, but I was actually becoming very interested in science fiction as opposed to fantasy at the time. So, of course, I knew about them because Will was one of my teachers, but he was also getting a lot of acclaim. All his books were winning awards, and he was actually just a judge for the National Book Awards this year. So he's just a fascinating person, and his knowledge of speculative fiction, science fiction and fantasy, is really encyclopedic. So I guess I knew about the books because he was my teacher, but it would be very, very hard not to see these books in the bookstores and on the awards long lists. And he's just an amazing writer.
You mentioned before to this idea of Gabe's background, the character of Gabe, is a really important part of it. And there's sort of these two parallel stories about aliens going on with both Gabe being the ambassador to this alien embassy and also his own parents, which we find out later are coming from Guadalajara, Mexico. And if you could talk about those two parallel sort of stories.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing I really love about this book, that it's a really clever way into discussing and thinking about some really difficult issues that we face in the real world. And obviously in the context of the coming election, this is, immigration has been a huge issue. And he, you know, Will wrote this long before this presidential election cycle. But I always like books, and this is one reason I really like sci-fi and fantasy, because you can do these very wide-ranging what-if scenarios, and you can draw these parallels that are maybe less threatening for a reader of any age, because it's fun to think about difference and otherness and inclusion and lack of inclusion when you're talking about alien races and fantasy creatures, and that's engaging and it's accessible to young readers. But to also put the sort of real world story underlying that, so readers will either consciously or unconsciously, as they read, draw parallels between this very fun, fantasy, otherworldly story with these themes and the very serious real world themes, it's a way into often very difficult conversations for younger people.
And it spends a lot of time talking about developing his family, this very close family relationship in the beginning of the book, his mother and father and his older sister and brother, and you know, what a close family they have. And I think he drew upon his own background and and creating this family. I don't know if you want to just talk about that, just this idea of family that's so important in the book to both Gabe and I imagine the author as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. And, you know, one thing that there's been a lot of thinking and writing about lately, and I read, I do developmental editing and I read a lot of middle grade manuscripts in progress at the moment. There does seem to be this glut of what we call dead parents. There's like a dead parent syndrome in a lot of books, new books for young people. And there's not actually that many models of functional, warm, loving families. And I mean, if you think about Harry Potter and the success of that, you know, he's an orphan, you know, and he lives with this family who really, really doesn't care for him at all. And that's been, I'm not blaming J.K. Rowling, I'm just saying it's that's kind of the mainstay of children's literature. And it's really important that we see books for this age group with functional, warm, loving families that also have real problems. I mean, you can be loving and care for each other and still have real problems. And I think that's a really good thing Ambassador does. And, you know, I mean, from what I know of the author, you know, he has a family and he has children, and he obviously has, you know, he's experienced a warm, loving family background, and he brings that to bear in his writing. I think it's important that middle grade books reflect all kinds of problems that families face. If there's no problems, there's no conflict. But the problem doesn't have to be that your parents have died or that your parents are ill or that your sibling is dying of some horrible disease. The problems can be outside of that but still affect all of you.
Another thing I thought was really interesting in the book was this, the way when Gabe goes to the embassy to communicate with the other beings around the universe, is this way of communication called entanglement. I don't know if you could try to, and it's interesting and a little complicated. I don't know if you want to explain that a little bit. It might be a little difficult. It's probably be difficult for me to explain. I don't know if you want to take a crack at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in fact, you know, the author could probably explain that better than me. But I very much like the premise that, and this is something I've actually, as part of my studies, I've studied science fiction writing and techniques for sci-fi writing. One of the problems you have in any story, whether it's an adult or a child story, where alien beings come into contact with each other, is the communications problem. Like, if you're going to have aliens who are as different as they're likely to be in real life, they're not going to probably have a way of communicating with each other very effectively. And in the movie and the book Contact, we saw that some years ago, that they have to communicate through the language of mathematics because that's likely to be the only language that, you know, everyone can understand. So if you're writing a book for children, as Will Alexander was in this book, you have to get over that problem fairly quickly, because otherwise you're going to bore your readers. Like, middle grade readers aren't going to wade through 100 pages of how you established a system of communication. This is a sort of the entanglement idea is very sort of accessible, childlike way of communicating in this kind of made up environment where everyone can kind of take a form that is actually very childlike and appear and interact and effectively play. I mean, it's sort of, when I read those scenes, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's very magical. So it's very relatable for young readers. But what you don't realize when you're just enjoying the story is that the author here is getting past that very, very difficult alien communication problem by, I don't know if you'd describe it as kind of a, it's not really a holographic projection. It's kind of just a projection into a completely made up environment where everyone can communicate together.
Yeah. And you mentioned the idea that they're playing with each other, which I thought was a really interesting, you know, how children's play is actually very sophisticated and a way that children, in fact, do learn about each other in the world and their social environment. So just the idea that it's through play that they learn and communicate with each other.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in fact, Will's earlier books, Goblin Secret and Ghoulish Song, are similar in that respect, although set in a fantasy world. Will Alexander has a theatre background himself, which is all about play and playing. So Goblin Secrets, it's an acting troupe, and a lot of the drama comes out of play making. And there's a similar parallel in the second book in that duology, but that's more with music than with actual play. But I think it's very true. I mean, I have young children of my own, and they work out the world through sort of made up scenarios that they act out with their friends and with each other. They just relate to story through sort of taking on a role and trying it out, and then trying out a different role and a different persona. And I think it is a very clever way of introducing children and younger readers to all sorts of issues, because that is a primary way that they experience the world too.
I'm thinking we probably should talk about the ending of the book, which is not, for people who might be interested in reading the book, that the ending of the book is not really an ending. And we don't want to give anything away or any spoilers. But what should readers be, if they start reading the book, be aware of at least?
They need to be aware that they need to have book two ready to go. And I was unfortunate in that, you know, when I read book one, book two wasn't out yet. Book one had been released and Will was still writing book two. And so I didn't actually know if that was the end of the story or not. And I asked him, I said, this is kind of a cliffhanger. Is that where you intended to end the book? And he's like, no, there's another book. So readers today have the advantage that the other book is out and you really need to get it, because even though it is a pet peeve of mine when books end on cliffhangers and I have to sort of get another book to read the end of the story, with this duology, it does break, I think, in a kind of a logical place, because where the second book takes up, there's more characters introduced. It's kind of a whole other cast of characters and the plot kind of explodes in a different direction. So looking at the two books together, you really do have to read them together, and it makes sense that the first book breaks where it does. But have the second book handy, because it is a cliffhanger.
Oh, very much so. And I did have a chance to read the second one. And certainly, you know, it's definitely a continuation, but a very different sort of book in its own right. Are there any particular passages of the book that stand out for you that you want to just either share or talk about?
Yeah, I have the book with me because I realized this may come up. And this is really, there's so much to love in these books. But one thing that I really love is very early on in the first book, because I am really, really interested in that idea of, I'm a Trekkie, Star Trek, First Contact, all this stuff. But I really am interested in this idea of how an alien makes first contact with a human. Is it going to be scary? Is it going to be funny? Is it going to be friendly? Is it going to be awe-inspiring? And when the human is a young human, like Gabe, who's 11 years old, how will the well-meaning envoy, who is this basically purple blob, like that's the envoy creature who comes and recruits the ambassadors from Earth, is a purple spherical blob that can take all sorts of different shapes. So I love the scene where he first introduces himself. So I thought I would read a couple of paragraphs. This is around page 28, 29 of my copy, and it's like in chapter 2 or 3, where the envoy has come in, has kind of introduced himself to the various animals that Gabe collects in his bedroom, and then decides to talk to Gabe. So I'm just going to read it. The envoy changed shape again, took a breath, and made air into words. Hello, it said again. Greetings to you. Welcome. No, wait. I mean that I'm asking for your welcome and attention rather than offering you welcome. This is your home, so it's not my role to be welcoming. You sound like my mum, Gabe whispered. You look like a purple sock puppet without any eyes glued on, though I can see right through you and there's no hand inside to make the mouth move, and you sound like my mum. The envoy nodded. I have mimicked the shape of her vocal cords so that I can talk to you in a pleasingly familiar way. Is it working? Not really, said Gabe. Nothing about this is pleasingly familiar. And I love that, because it's just, and actually I've heard Will read that, and he reads it with, he's an actor, he does great accents, but you see how he uses humor there. Like he uses humor in the alien trying very hard, getting it wrong. It's funny to the reader because the reader's in on the joke. The reader sees what the envoy is trying to do. And Gabe is like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go with it, but I'm really quite scared. So I just really love
I do
that.
Notice, yeah, he has that initial reaction of being a little uncertain and scared, but he does seem to accept being the idea of being asked pretty quickly. I don't know if that's just a quality of him being a young person, which the envoy tells him later on is a very key thing. He asks why someone so young, and he said that's because of children don't have so many things blocking them that would keep them from being able to be open to new ideas.
Yeah, and I think that's key to this story, and actually a lot of great middle grade speculative fiction is the idea that there's something special about children and childhood, that, you know, this age group is more open to accepting strange new things and rolling with them. And I think it's also nice that, you know, when the envoy explains to Gabe why he chose Gabe, he also points out some of Gabe's qualities, like that are specific to Gabe, like the way Gabe is nice to animals and the way Gabe cares about other people, and sort of the idea that the intergalactic community is watching and they value our kindness and our humanity and our better qualities. But I do think the general point is true too, that, I mean, that's very much the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory thing again, that Willy Wonka wants a child to take over because children have that amazing imagination and capacity to try new things.
Just one more thing. I was thinking of another quote. I mean, for me, this sort of takeaway quote of the book, which is an interesting idea that that there's no such thing as safe. There's only trust.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a really important message. And that's, I think, a theme that we learn again and again in our lives. And I mean, if anyone thinks about their own life, I think we spend humans, particularly when we have families and people we care about that we want to protect, we spend a lot of time searching for control, you know, that safety, that security. We want financial security. We want emotional security. We want to feel secure and safe. And really, our lives are not ever 100% within our control. So all we can really have is trust and, you know, belief in the kind of people that we care about to protect us and we look out for them. But, you know, that's something I've faced again and again in my life, and I felt that way as a young person. And then when I had my own children, obviously you worry about them and you can't control every little thing. You know, you can never make them 100% safe. You're not watching your kids every minute of the day. You can't control everything they do. And I do think for young readers, that's a really very powerful and important message.
Oh, absolutely. And someone with my kids myself, you know, it's a hard idea, I think, for adults more than kids to that idea that there's no such thing as safe. Thank you very much, you know, for bringing this book to my attention and talking to me today. Like I said, one of the nice things about this podcast is being introduced to books that I haven't read before and having a chance to read them and then having a chance to talk about them and hopefully share them with other people who might be interested in both this and the sequel Nomad. So thank you again for doing this today.
You're very welcome. And I certainly recommend these books to young and old readers because they're just so much fun, but also have messages, I think, that will stick with you.
So you can find Jackie at her website, Casey McGuire, author and book lover. That's at CaseyMcGuire.com. And again, at contributing blogger at Luna Station Quarterly, which is at LunaStationQuarterly.com.
Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purple-planet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can find out more about me at jleemott.com. That's jleemott.com. Or contact me at jodymott@gmail.com. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.